Manushikavpatvibhascha, Vibhasanyogayavacha, Patitaram Pavanevya Vaishnavya. We're reading from the 14th chapter of the 6th canto. The previous chapter discussed how Indra dealt with the sinful reactions that came to him after he killed Vritrasura, who, although an asura, was not actually a demon at all. He was actually a great devotee. Prior to that, in chapter 12, describes how Indra did kill Vritrasura. And in the previous chapter, it described the incredibly very sweet words of Vritrasura that the acharyas have commented on quite extensively, that really show his devotion and his detachment. Because naturally, the more one is devoted, the less one is attached to the material world. One is detached from the material world. And the greatest attachment that we have, naturally, is, everyone knows, what is it? What's our greatest attachment? Yeah. False conception of the self, our body being us. This is the greatest intoxication, actually. Prabhupada once said, compared to that intoxication, the intoxication of identifying with the body and trying to, in illusion, trying to enjoy that, the opposite of intoxication is so, or intoxicated is sobriety, sober. Dhiras tatra namuyate. The wise person, the sober person, he understands, he is fixed actually by goodness, he is fixed in knowing his identity, not as a body, but as the eternal soul. So compared to the intoxication of identification of the self with the body, Prabhupada said, that all other intoxications are like salt and pepper. In other words, they're just minor spices compared to that intoxication, because it's so deep, and it so much permeates how we think, how we speak, how we act, because that intoxication dictates how we think of ourself, our self-concept, abhimana. Our self-concept, how we conceive of ourself, we conceive it as the body. But Vritrasura, although within the body of a demon, was not bewildered at all by bodily identification. Rather, he was detached fully from his body, and he didn't care for being alive, although he did his duty. Rather, he wanted Indra to kill him. As he meditated, himself meditated upon the lotus feet of the Lord, he was telling Indra, you kill me, you kill me. You separate me from my body. I know that that is the Lord's desire. That is the Lord's plan. He's given you this vajra, this thunderbolt weapon by which I can be killed. So he has sided with you in this fight. So therefore, go ahead. You kill me. I'll do my duty and fight with you. But inside, in my consciousness, I'm going to be thinking about the Lord, and therefore I will go to His lotus feet, His service. I will go to the spiritual world. Na nākaprishtam na ca parameshtam na sarvabhomam na risadipatyan na yoga siddhir. I don't want anything. From residence in the top planet to the lower planets, I don't want anything. Not even liberation or yogic powers. Na yoga siddhira punam bhavams ba. Nitya chakorma krutakaya. All I want is your service, dear Lord. So he prayed in that way. And then, that was at the end of chapter 11. In chapter 12, Vritrasura was killed very nobly doing his duty, fighting with Indra. And then Indra received sinful reactions for having killed this great soul, even though it was his duty, and service even. And then, in chapter 14, begins with Prakritin Raj, who is hearing this pastime from Sukadeva Goswami. He inquires, how is it possible that that someone who has taken this kind of birth was actually a great devotee? What has he done to get himself in this kind of predicament? Because the body and the soul are different. So what has this soul done that require him taking birth in this body of his demon, who is so incredibly powerful, yet his sole purpose is to fight with Indra, purpose of his existence? So what has he done? So this is what Prakritin Raj is going to ask. So I'll read the first 8 verses in this chapter. There's not very many purports. I'll read the first 8 verses to get us a feel for his question, and then we'll go back and read some of the simple purports that Prabhupada has given. Text 1. King Prakritin inquired from Sukadeva Goswami, O learned Brahmana, demons are generally sinful. Being obsessed with the modes of passion and ignorance. So obsession with passion and ignorance makes us act sinfully, which entangles us further in passion and ignorance, which makes us act more sinfully, covering us further, deeper and deeper. One entangles oneself. Rather, as Krishna explained in the 17th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, the mode of goodness is elevating. So someone who is sinful, obsessed with the modes of passion ignorance, this is practically the definition of a demon. How then, so how then, if demons are like that, asuras are like that, how then could Vritrasura have attained such exalted love for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayan? 2. Demigods situated in the mode of goodness and great saints cleansed of the dirt of material enjoyment hardly ever render pure devotional service to the lotus feet of Mukunda. Therefore, how could Vritrasura have become such a great devotee? Even demigods and great saints very rarely engage in pure devotion. And Vritrasura, he was a pure devotee. How is this? Fully detached. And detached from his body and bodily pleasures, and attached to the lotus feet of the Lord. In this material world, there are as many living entities as atoms. How many is that? So many? Too many? So many living entities. As many as there are atoms. How many atoms are in one bottle, glass? What is this? What would you call this thing? Not a glass, because it's not exactly glass. But one drink container that we put water in. Cup. That's what it's called, a cup. Cup top. We can't even estimate the amount of atoms in this. What to speak of the amount of atoms of the water that in droplets on it. What to speak of the amount of atoms in the material world. So there are as many living entities as atoms, uncountable numbers of living entities. Amongst these living entities, a very few are human beings. And amongst them, few are interested in following religious principles. So this is similar to what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says to Rupa Goswami in the beginning of his instructions, the Rupa Shiksha in Chaitanya Charitamrita. There are so many living entities. so many living entities, and out of those, so few are humans. And out of those that are humans, how many are interested in following religious principles to elevate themselves? Sukadeva Goswami continues, O best of the Brahmins. Sukadeva Goswami, out of many persons, O best of the Brahmins, Sukadeva Goswami, this is the question that Prickett Raj is asking. Out of many persons who follow religious principles, only a few desire liberation, because most religious people are interested in having their desires met, attaining wealth, being religious. So few are actually interested in things other than being in the material world. So only a few desire liberation from the material world. And out of many thousands who desire liberation, one may achieve liberation, giving up material attachment to society, friendship, love, country, home, wife, and children. And among many thousands of such liberated persons, one who can understand the true meaning of liberation is very rare. And the next verse is a very famous one, and I believe that Mahaprabhu quoted this verse to Srila Rupa Goswami. Muktanam api siddhanam narayana parayana sadolabha prasanatma kuteshapi mahamune. Muktanam api siddhanam. Out of those who are perfect, out of, say, O great sage, amongst many millions who are liberated in perfect in knowledge and liberation, one, Narayana Parayana, one who is actually understands that Lord Narayana is the supreme and renders devotional service to him, Sadulabha, very, very, very rare, Prasanatma, he is very deeply peaceful. Out of so many millions of liberated souls, even Kotishapi Mahamune. So a great sage amongst many millions who are liberated and perfect in knowledge of liberation, one may be a devotee of Lord Narayan or Krishna. Such devotees who are fully peaceful are extremely rare. Well, there's a long purport to that verse, which we'll read. Vritrasura. So he's describing the rarity of one being a devotee. And somehow or another, Vritrasura was situated in the blazing fire of battle and was infamous, and was an infamous sinful demon, always engaged in giving troubles and anxieties to others. How could such a demon become so greatly Krishna conscious? My dear Lord Sukadeva Goswami, although Vritrasura was a sinful demon, he showed the prowess of a most exalted Kshatriya and satisfied Lord Indra in battle. How could such a demon be a great devotee of Lord Krishna? These contradictions have caused me great doubt, and they have made me eager to hear of this from you. So we'll read some of the purports of this section. To the first verse, describing the basic cause of the consciousness, demonic consciousness, the sinful reactions that force one into passion and ignorance. Prabhupada's purport. In this material world, everyone is obsessed with the modes of passion and ignorance, and obsessed is the right word for it. Compulsively obsessed. This is the very nature of the material world, what to speak of contemporary society, which is especially obsessed with passion and ignorance. However, unless one conquers these modes and comes to the platform of goodness, there is no chance of one's becoming a pure devotee. This is confirmed by Lord Krishna himself in the Bhagavad Gita. Yesham tvantagata papam jananam punyakarmanam te dvanva mohavani mukta bhajante mam dridha vrata. What does dridha vrata mean? It means
dead
Yeah, Dhrita means like Dhritarashtra. It's a person who is holding tightly to his kingdom. Dhrita means holding tightly, vrata, to his vow. Dhrita vrataha. Bhajanti mam dhridha vrata. So unless one is free from passion, ignorance, all sins, one cannot worship me. Bhajante mam, Krishna says, with a firm vow, holding tight, fixed vow. Persons who have acted piously in previous lives and in this life, whose sinful actions are completely eradicated, and who are freed from the duality of delusion, engage themselves in my service with determination. Since Vritrasura was amongst the demons, Maharaj Prickett wondered how it was possible for him to have become such an exalted devotee. Those demons, again, are usually fixed in passion and ignorance, not in devotion. And Prabhupada's purport to text 5, to that Muktanam Api Siddhanam verse, Narayana Parayana, out of so many Kotish. Koti koti means so many thousands and millions of liberated persons, perfect persons, muktanam, apisiranam, then Narayana Parayana, one who is dear to Lord Narayan, sudulava, very rare and deeply peaceful. Because why? Why is such a one who is actually fixed in his relationship with Lord Narayan, with Lord Krishna, why is he so peaceful? Because he knows that he is living in Krishna's mercy. Bhoktaram jagatapasam, that he's giving everything. He knows Krishna's position as the bhokta, the enjoyer. Not himself as the enjoyer, but he knows Krishna as the enjoyer. And the sarvaloka maheshwaram, he's the controller, the enjoyer and the controller of everything. And not only that, he's the suridam. Sudit means very, very close and near and dear friend of all living entities. So if one knows these things, not just intellectually, but has realized those things and lives on this platform, Gyatvamam Shanti Vichyati, that he is peaceful. Knowing this, one actually becomes peaceful because he's living by the mercy of his all-powerful, who is his surit, his dear friend. So what does he have to worry about? Here's Prabhupada's purport. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur gives the following purport to this verse. Simply desiring mukti or liberation is insufficient. One must become factually liberated. When one understands the futility of the materialistic way of life, and that, I think Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur would say that when one has concluded that he does not want anything in the material world, he has taken the greatest step in spiritual life. In other words, when one has concluded that even if I possess the universe, what to speak of the little things that I desire now that I think are going to make me happy. My dreams, my illusions. If one understands there's nothing in the material world that can satisfy me, but I need something beyond that, and I'm endeavoring in that way, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says, that one like that has taken the greatest step in spiritual life. And he told the story of the wedding party, the boat with the wedding party, and they're rowing all night long, and they wake up the next morning in the same place they started from. And what was the cause of them not getting anywhere? The anchor was not pulled up. And what is the anchor? Material attachment. So we're rowing, I speak for myself, I'm rowing and rowing for 10 years, 20 years, 30 years. And I look around to see how the exalted distance I've gotten, and I see, it looks familiar. I wonder why. So we have to pull up the anchor of the material attachments and material desires. When one understands the futility of the materialistic way of life, one becomes advanced in knowledge, and therefore he situates himself in the vanaprastha order, unattached to family, wife, and children. One should then further progress to the platform of sannyas, the actual renounced order, never to fall again and be afflicted by materialistic life. Even though one desires to be liberated, this does not mean he is liberated. Only rarely is someone liberated. Indeed, although many men take sannyas to become liberated, because of their imperfections, they again become attached to women, material activities, social welfare work, and so on. These are the traps. So sannyas specifically means that one has set his mind, he has concluded that there's nothing in the material world, so he is nyas, or renounced, and he is fully depending on Krishna. After one paragraph, Prabhupada explains. There are two kinds of jnanis. One is inclined to devotional service, and the other to impersonal realization. Impersonalists generally undergo great endeavor for no tangible benefit. And therefore it is said that they are husking paddy that has no grain. Stula tushavagatinaha. The other class of jnanis, whose jnana is mixed with bhakti, are also of two kinds. Those who are devoted to the so-called false form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and those who understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead as Satchidananda Vigraha, the actual spiritual form. The Mayavadi devotees worship Narayana or Vishnu with the idea that Vishnu has accepted a form of Maya and that the ultimate truth is actually impersonal. So that's the first kind of jnani there mentioned, of the second kind. The pure devotee, however, never thinks that Vishnu has accepted a body of Maya. Instead, he knows perfectly well that the original absolute truth is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. An interesting phrase. The pure devotee, however, never thinks that Vishnu has accepted a body of Maya. Instead, he knows perfectly well. What do we know perfectly well, completely, fully, with that depth of realization? He knows perfectly well that the original absolute truth is the Supreme Person. Original. What does original mean? What comes to your mind when we think of the original? The first, yeah. The source, yeah. Yeah, started everything. The beginning. He's the original. Absolute, the original absolute truth, the source of everything else is the Supreme Person. Such a devotee is actually situated in knowledge. He never merges in the Brahman effulgence, as stated in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Ye nye ravindakshava muktamaninas tvayasta bhavad avashuddha buddhaya aruha kitsrena parampadam tata patyantyado andrita yusmarangraya. O Lord, the intelligence of those who think themselves liberated but who have no devotion is impure. Even though they rise to the highest point of liberation by dint of severe penances and austerities, they are sure to fall down again into material existence, for they do not take shelter at your lotus feet. Evidence of this same point is also given in the Bhagavad Gita, wherein the Lord says, Avajananti mamudha manusham taramashritam parambhava majananto mamabhuta mahishvaram. Fools deride me when I descend in the human form. They do not know my transcendental nature and my supreme dominion over all that be. When rascals, mudas, see that Krishna acts exactly like a human being, they deride the transcendental form of the Lord because they do not know the parambhavam, do not know the Param Bhavam, his transcendental form and activities. Such persons are further described in Bhagavad Gita as follows. Mogasya moga kamano moga jnana vachetasa rakshashim asharim chayva prakritim mohanim shrita. Those who are thus bewildered, those who think that Krishna's form is material, manushyam tanam ashrita, that the impersonal has accepted ashrita, shelter of this manushya tanam, this human-like form, param bhavam ajanato, they don't understand. What? Mama Bhuta Maheshwaram, that I'm the Maheshwara of this, the supreme controller of everything. And what will happen to them? Moghasya moga karmano moga jnana vachestasa. All asa means hopes. All their hopes, all their karma, all their actions, all their jnana, all their knowledge, ruined. Why? Rakshashim asurim chaiva. They've taken shelter, prakriti, mohanim, their illusion, and taken ashrita, shelter of the rakshasha asura mentality. And they're deluded by the prakriti, the material energy. So all their hopes are ruined, all their desires for liberation. Thus Mayavadis who think this way, they don't attain liberation. Those who are thus bewildered are attracted by demonic and atheistic views in that deluded condition. Their hopes for liberation, their fruit of activities, and their culture of knowledge are all defeated. Such persons do not know that Krishna's body is not material. In the early days, something even like in that picture, there, when the early artists of ISKCON, more or less imitating the old Christian paintings, they would show a picture with a halo and effulgence around his head. But actually, and Prabhupada said that it's not only Krishna's head that's effulgent, it's every part of his body is effulgent from head to toe. It's all Sachidananda Vigraha. It's all fully spiritual, effulgent. And that effulgence that is jyoti, or the Brahma jyoti, which the impersonalists are so fond of merging into. So such persons do not know that Krishna's body is not material. There is no distinction between Krishna's body and his soul. But because less intelligent men see Krishna as a human being, they deride him. They cannot imagine how a person like Krishna could be the origin of everything. Govindamari Purusham Tamam Vajami. Such persons are described as moga asa, baffled in their hopes. Whatever they desire for the future will be baffled. Even if they apparently engage in devotional service, they're described as moghasya because they ultimately desire to merge into the Brahman effulgence. Those who aspire to be elevated to the heavenly planets by devotional service will also be frustrated because this is not the result of devotional service. However, they are given a chance to engage in devotional service and be purified, as stated in Srimad Bhagavatam, Shinvatam, Sukhata Krishna, Punya Shravani Kirtana, Vidhyanta Stoya Badarani, Vidunoti Suritsitam. See, Krishna, the personality of Godhead, who is the Paramatma, Supersoul in everyone's heart, and the benefactor of the truthful devotee, cleanses desire for material enjoyment from the heart of the devotee who relishes his messages, which are in themselves virtuous when properly heard and chanted. Krishna himself purifies one who is eager to hear. Rajanta stole from within the heart all the abhadrani, the inauspiciousness. Unless the dirt within the core of one's heart is cleansed away, one cannot become a pure devotee. Therefore the word sadolabha, very rarely found, is used in this verse. Not only among hundreds and thousands, but among millions of perfectly liberated souls, a pure devotee is hardly ever found. Therefore the word kotishapiya used herein. Srila Madhvacharya gives the following quotation from the Tantra Bhagavata. Navakotyas tu devanam rishya saptakotaya narayanayana sarve ikichit takparayana. There are 90 million demigods and 70 million sages who are all called Narayanayana, devotees of Lord Narayan. Amongst them, only a few are called Narayan Parayana. Narayanayana deva Rishyadyas tatparayana brahmanadya kechanayvasyu siddho yogya sukamlava. The difference between the siddhas and Narayana Parayanas is that direct devotees are called Narayana Parayanas, whereas those who perform various types of mystic yoga are called siddhas. So Narayana Parayanas have the great fortune of grace, of mercy, of Krishna doing the work for them. Rajantistoya badrani vidanoti suritsitam. From within, Krishna, by his power, cleanses the heart. When the siddhis, the siddhas, or the yogis, or the demigods, or the sages attempt through their own powers, ascending powers, they may become very holy, they may become very pure, but they cannot completely remove the dust from the heart, the dirt from the heart. They cannot completely remove, practically speaking, the false ego. Because to remove the false ego, we have to be engaged with the real ego, with a real identity in Krishna's loving service. And that comes by Krishna's mercy. So then the devotee, Krishna's causeless mercy. So does that mean that we cannot do anything? That we should not do anything? We should just act any old way and expect Krishna to rain down his causeless mercy upon us? Certainly if he so desires to do that, he may. But it is our part of it to try our best through sincerity, acting sincerely with whatever situation we're in, whatever, regardless of how much passion and ignorance that happens to contaminate our heart, if we will just act sincerely from that position in a humble way, that will attract Krishna's mercy. Text 6. Purport. Again, the point being, considering devotional service is so rare, how is it that this Vishwasura is such a great devotee? Text 6. It has been described that a Narayana Parayana, pure devotee, is rarely found even amongst millions and millions of persons. Therefore, Prickett Maharaj was surprised that Vishwasura, whose purpose was to give trouble and anxiety to others, he wasn't at all acting on a saintly level. He was fighting with the demigods, the suras. How is it that his purpose was to give trouble and anxiety to others? How is he one of those devotees, one of those rare souls, even on the battlefield? What was the reason for Vitrasura's advancement? So now we're going to start hearing the reply of Sutta Goswami, saying he's relating the conversation between Maharaj Prickett and Sukadev. Sutta Goswami said, after hearing Prickett Maharaj's very intelligent question, Sukadev Goswami, the most powerful sage, began answering his disciple with great affection. Sri Sukadev Goswami said, O King, I shall speak to you the same history I have heard from the mouths of Vyasadev, Narada, and Devala. Please listen with attention. O King Prickett. So now here we're going to hear how Vritrasura became so a great devotee. In the province of Surasena, there was a king named Chitraketu, who ruled the entire earth. During his reign, the earth produced all the necessities of life. We'll read just a little bit of Prabhupada's purport where he describes when a good king is reigning, then the earth gives forth its produce in abundance. We have experienced that in some seasons the rains produce abundance, and in other seasons there is scarcity. We have no control over the earth's productiveness, for it is naturally under the full control of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. By His order, the Lord can make the earth produce sufficiently or insufficiently. If a pious king rules the earth according to the Shastric injunctions, there will naturally be regular rainfalls and sufficient produce to provide for all men. There will be no question of exploitation, for everyone will have enough. Black marketeering and other corrupt dealings will then automatically stop. Simply ruling the land cannot solve man's problems unless the leader has spiritual capabilities. He must be like Maharaj Yudhisthira, Prickett Maharaj, or Ramachandra. Then all the inhabitants of the land will be extremely happy. So Chitraketu ruled a successful kingdom where everyone was provided the necessities of life. This Chitraketu, text 11, had 10 million wives. That's a lot. But although he was capable of producing children, he did not receive a child from any of them. By chance, all the wives were barren. Chitraketu, the husband of these millions of wives, was endowed with a beautiful form, magnanimity, and youth. He was born in a high family. He had complete education. He was wealthy and opulent. Nevertheless, in spite of being endowed with all these assets, he was full of anxiety because he did not have a son. We'll read some of Prabhupada's purport. It appears that the king first married one wife, but she could not bear a child. Then he married a second, a third, a fourth, and so on. But none of the wives could bear children. In spite of the material assets of Janmaishwarya Shuta Shri, birth in an aristocratic family with full opulence, wealth, education, and beauty, he was very much aggrieved because in spite of having so many wives, he had no son. So this is specifically about Chitraketu's grief. But in another sense, we're all like that. We have so many assets, or have some assets, but whatever assets we have, they are not the source of our happiness. There's something that we don't have, that somebody else has, that we think, only if I had that, then I would be happy, and I need that, and the consciousness focuses on that, and is therefore unhappy. And therefore, it is sometimes said that the quality that can make us happy or can make us unhappy doesn't have anything to do with what assets we have. It's gratitude. Because if we have gratitude, then we're satisfied and happy and grateful for what we have. And if we're what's the opposite word?
Ungrateful.
Yes. If we're ungrateful to what Krishna has given us and provided for us, no matter what we have, it will be insufficient. So to cultivate gratitude is great and makes one satisfied. But that means that one has to have diminished passion and ignorance. Chitraketu's queens all had beautiful faces and attractive eyes. Yet neither his opulences, his hundreds and thousands of queens, nor the lands of which he was the supreme proprietor were sources of happiness for him. Once upon a time, when the powerful sage named Angira was traveling all over the universe without engagement, by his sweet will he came to the palace of King Chitraketu. Chitraketu immediately stood up from his throne and offered him worship. He was the king. He was so powerful. But yet, when the sage came, he showed great reverence. He stood up and he said, "You sit on the throne. I will worship you." So contrast that to Indra's dealings that we read about at the beginning of the canto. Indra didn't respect his spiritual master, Brihaspati, and was cursed, practically speaking, neglected, scorned. But this king, Chitraketu, he was very respectful. He offered drinking water and eatables, and in this way performed his duty as a host to a great guest. When the rishi was seated very comfortably, the king, restraining his mind, because he was internally very unhappy, and senses, he sat on the ground at the side of the rishi's feet. "O King Prickett," Sukadev Goswami said, "when Chitraketu, bent low in humility, was seated at the lotus feet of the great sage, the sage congratulated him for his humility and hospitality. The sage addressed him in the following words." The great sage Angira said, "My dear king, I hope that your body and mind and your royal associates and paraphernalia are well. When the seven properties of material nature, the total material energy, the ego, and the five objects of sense gratification are in proper order, the living entity within the material elements is happy. Without these seven elements, one cannot exist. Similarly, a king is always protected by seven elements: his instructor, Swami or Guru, his ministers, his kingdom, his fort, his treasury, his royal order, and his friends." Here's Prabhupada's purport. It is quoted, as it is quoted by Sridhar Swami in his Bhagavatam commentary, "Swam yamatya janapada durga dravina sanchaya dandu mitram chatasyaita sapta prakritayo mata." A king is not alone. He first has his spiritual master, the supreme guide. Then come his ministers, his kingdom, his fortifications, his treasury, his system of law and order, and his friends or allies. If these seven are properly maintained, the king is happy. Similarly, as explained in the Bhagavad Gita, Dehenosmin Yata Dehe, the living entity, the soul, is within the material covering of the Mahatattva, ego, and Pancha Tanmatra, the five objects of sense gratification. When these seven are in proper order, the living entity is in a mood of pleasure. Generally, when the associates of the king are quiet and obedient, the king can be happy. Therefore, the great sage Angira inquired about the king's personal health and the good fortune of his seven associates. When we inquire from a friend whether everything is well, we are concerned not only with his personal self, but also with his family, his source of income, and his assistants or servants. But all of them must be well, and then a person can be happy. Angira continued, "O King, O Lord of humanity, when a king directly depends upon his associates and follows their instructions, he is happy. Similarly, when his associates offer their gifts and activities to the king and follow his orders, they are also happy." Prabhupada's short purport. The actual happiness of a king and his dependents is described in this verse. A king should not simply give orders to his dependents because he is supreme. Sometimes he must follow their instructions. Similarly, the dependents should depend on the king. This mutual dependence will make everyone happy. "O king, are your wives, citizens, secretaries, and servants, and the merchants who sell spices and oil under your control? Are you also in full control of ministers, the inhabitants of your palace, your provincial governors, your sons, and other dependents?" Purport. The master or king and his subordinates should be interdependent. Through cooperation, both of them can be happy. Angira continued, "If the king's mind is fully controlled, all his family members and governmental officers are subordinate to him. His provincial governors present taxes on time without resistance, and what to speak of lesser servants?" Purport. Angira Rishi asked the king whether his mind was also under control. This is most essential for happiness. Okay, Chitraketu, I can observe that your mind is not pleased. You seem not to have achieved your desired goal. Is this because of you yourself, or has it been caused by others? Your pale face reflects your deep anxiety. Sukadeva Goswami said, O King Prickett, although the great sage Angira knew everything, he inquired from the king in this way. Thus King Chitraketu, desiring a son, bent low in great humility and spoke to the great sage as follows. Purport. Since the face is the index of the mind, a saintly person can study the condition of one's mind by seeing his face. When Angira Rishi remarked about the king's discolored face, King Chitraketu explained the cause of his anxiety as follows. King Chitraketu said, O great Lord Angira, because of austerity, knowledge, and transcendental samadhi, you are freed from all the reactions of sinful life. Therefore, as a perfect yogi, you can understand everything external and internal regarding embodied conditioned souls like us. O great soul, you are aware of everything, yet you are asking me why I am full of anxiety. Therefore, in response to your order, let me disclose the cause. As a person aggrieved by hunger and thirst is not pleased by the external gratification of flower garlands or sandalwood pulp, I am not pleased with my empire, opulence, or possessions, which are desirable even for demigods, because I have no son. Therefore, O great sage, please save me and my forefathers, who are descending to the darkness of hell because I have no progeny. Kindly do something so that I may have a son to deliver us from hellish conditions. Purport. According to Vedic civilization, one gets married simply to have a son who is needed to offer oblations to his forefathers. King Chitraketu responsibly desired to beget a child so that he and his forefathers might be delivered from the darkest regions. He was concerned with how to get pinda, oblations, in the next life, not only for himself, but also for his forefathers. Therefore, he requested Angira Muni to favor him by doing something that could help him get a son. In response to the request of Marachatraketu, Angira Rishi, who was born of Lord Brahma's mind, he was so powerful, directly born from Lord Brahma, was very merciful towards him. Because the sage was a greatly powerful personality, he performed the sacrifice by offering oblations of sweet rice to Twasta. O Prickett Maharaj, best of the Bharatas, the remnants of the food offered in the Jagya were given by the great sage Angira to the first and most perfect among Chitraketu's millions of queens, whose name was Kritaduti. Thereafter, the great sage told the king, O great king, now you will have a son who will be the cause of both jubilation and lamentation. The verse says, Harsha Shoka Pradastubhyam Iti Brahma Suto Yayo. Harsha Shoka. Harsha means happiness, Soka means lamentation. The sage, after saying this, your son will cause you both happiness and lamentation, he left without waiting for Chitraketu's response. That's the final verse we'll read. Let's read Prabhupada's purport. The word harsha means jubilation and shoka means lamentation. The king was overwhelmed with joy when he understood that he would have a son. Because of his great jubilation, he could not actually understand the statement of the sage Angira. He accepted it to mean that there would certainly be jubilation because the birth of his future son, but that he would be the king's only son, and being very proud of his great wealth and empire, he would not be very obedient to his father. Thus the king was satisfied, thinking, let there be a son. It does not matter if he is not very obedient.
In Bengal, there's a proverb that instead of having no maternal uncle, it is better to have a maternal uncle who is blind. The king accepted this philosophy, thinking that a disobedient son would be better than no son at all. The great sage Chanakya Pandit says, Kaurita putena jatena yona vidvan dharmika kanena chakshush kimva chakshush pindaiva kevalam. What is the use of a son who is neither a learned scholar nor a devotee? Such a son is like a blind, diseased eye, which always causes suffering. Nevertheless, the material world is so polluted that one wants to have a son even though he is useless. This attitude was represented in the history of King Chitraketu. So Chitraketu is told that his son will be the cause of happiness, but lamentation, and Angira Muni then left. So we'll continue with this exciting drama tomorrow. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.